When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raider Tour Radio, episode 539, coming to you on Thursday, May 16th. We're going to talk about the latest in USC football, which is really just us putting together our dream team, our 21st century dream team on offense of Trojans. Last week we did the defense. This week we're doing the offense. Plus we're going to do a big 10 minutes looking at Iowa, University of Iowa, the Hawkeyes. So looking forward to that. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rant of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rant of Troy. Email address, rantoftroyfansad.com. And our phone number, 818-643-7227.
Suck it, what's Brewing
Joe? I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Rant of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. It's Thursday.
It is.
Yeah. Cam in the chat says it feels like a Tuesday, but of course we all know that Tuesday has no feel, Monday has a feel, Friday has a feel, Sunday has a feel, but Tuesday, no feel, but today's Thursday.
You're making a reference. I understand that you're making a reference. Do I know what that reference is? No, I do not.
You're killing me.
Should I know what that reference is?
You're killing me. You're killing independent Michael.
I again feel like you're making a reference, and again feel like I do not know what that reference is, and wonder if I should know this reference.
Anyways, we're here on a Thursday. We're going to be here yesterday, Wednesday, which has been our day lately. But yesterday was NFL schedule release day. So our friends covering the Chiefs over at Arrowhead Addict had our little studio booked, so we share a little virtual studio with them, which is always fun. Usually, you know, not many different conflicts, but the schedule is important, Alicia. The schedule comes out, the NFL schedule, like everything stops. Everyone's got to put out their videos. Did you have a favorite?
The Titans win it every year for me. The past 2 years they've done their on Man on the Street. Where they ask him to identify the logo, and mm-hmm. then everybody gets the logos hilariously wrong.
Stealing
and then,
a bit from TikTok.
Yeah, but it's funny. Like, I love
unoriginal.
It. It's funny. They do it perfectly. Last year, there was a girl who called the Falcons the Red Stallions. They had her host it this year. You probably hate it because everyone looks at the Jaguars and goes, I don't know that team. ? And then I always get a kick out of, like, everyone thinks they know the Colts, but it's not the Colts. They think that the horseshoe is like the Cowboys or something else. Like, every year I just absolutely get a huge kick out of it every time. And then, of course, there's the Chargers who always do something creative in this and roast basically everybody on their schedule. And they're very, very good at that.
The Harrison Butker in the kitchen thing.
It just absolutely Chef's kiss. Killed me.
That was great. The Lions did the I Think You Should Leave bit with Tim Robinson and the guy from Veep, who I can never remember his name.
Yeah, I don't know.
That was pretty good. The only downside of that is that bit was completely independent of what the schedule was, which I understand.
That's like, my problem.
They got to get the details very late, so they got to record everything sort of before and then put together the video. Like the Chiefs video was, they were going off those viral TikTok videos of the pressure press things.
Yeah.
And so then they just record, they just edit it in the order of the actual schedule. Yeah. You know?
I like schedule release videos that are actually releasing the schedule.
Sure.
I don't like the ones that are skits or bits. I like the closest that I'll get to the skits or bits thing is the way the Chargers do it, which is they tend to do it in the style of something. So last year it was anime. This year it was in the style of The Sims, but like each bit of it is literally releasing the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that are like too theatrical, that require too much acting from people who aren't actors, the ones that take a long time and don't get to the point, I'm not here for them. I want it delivered straight. I have a low attention span and I need it just bam, bam, bam.
My little old man yells at cloud take about this. I hate seeing the schedule one by one. Just give me the full list. Just give me the list. I want team by team lists. I also don't like week by week lists from the whole league. Like that is always confusing to me.
Yeah.
When like, oh, the Pac-12 would always do this. The Pac-12 releases its schedule in week 3, it's going to be SC against Stanford, Oregon State against Arizona. And it's like, this doesn't help me. Just tell me what SC's schedule is and then what Oregon State's schedule is. Like, having it mixed up here, my brain can't compute it. But in the chat, artist formerly known as Jabroni Jabber Brody says, gotta love the Bears schedule. Caleb is going to the Super Bowl. week 1 for the Bears and Caleb Williams is the Tennessee Titans at home at Soldier Field. So mark your calendars.
The schedule isn't that bad for him. I mean, it's not going to be a cakewalk, but, you know, I think there's a path for potential playoff contention here. I'm not going to say he's going to go to the Super Bowl, but I don't know. I think there's something to like there. The Titans had a really bad pass defense last year, but they've added a bunch of free agents to shore up their secondary, headlined by L'Jarius Sneed of the Chiefs. So
sure,
might be a little bit more of a challenge than it would have been last year. But yeah, I like Caleb's setup here.
Yeah, they play the Jags week 6 at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah, going to London.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the thing everybody is here for, hearing our post-2000 dream team offense. Last week we talked about the defense. We each made our picks. It was a grand old time. We had a great fun episode. If you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to it. But this one, all about the offense. So, Alicia, let's start with the dream team offense. Again, the premise, we are picking a starting offense of 11 peak of their powers Trojans since the year 2000 on the premise of needing to win a one-game playoff in today's game of college football. Using today's coaching staff, we're just going to imagine that this coaching staff is the one putting it all together, but you get to pick the personnel. Last week we picked 12 defenders. This week we're just picking 11 because we have a special position, a flex position. So we're going two receivers, tight end, running back, a flex spot. So you can pick a third receiver, a second running back, a second tight end, whatever you think Lincoln Riley could really use. have fun. And then obviously a quarterback, a left tackle and guard, center, right tackle and right guard as well. So let's start out with the first position, Alicia. It is, of course, wide receiver. Who is your first wide receiver?
I believe it should be Marquise Lee, unless you put it in a different order.
It is.
Yeah, I simply think in a one-game outing, Marquise Lee is the best playmaker at wide receiver I've ever seen at USC. I think the wide receiver is arguably the toughest position to choose for USC's offense, simply because there are too many to choose from. I don't think there's a wrong combination with a million other guys. Like, I don't have Amon-Ra St. Brown on my team. I don't have Juju Smith-Schuster on my team. I don't have Mike Williams on my team, for some spoilers. There's a bajillion. Drake London is not on my team. You know, Michael Pittman is not on my team. There's a million great receivers who deserve to be on this team, and I don't have them there because in a one game scenario, I think that Marquise Lee simply can dominate at every level of the field, in every spot at wide receiver. He just, for one game dominance, I don't think you get better than Marquise Lee, in my opinion. When he, like, Marquise Lee being unhealthy as an NFL player is like the saddest thing that I've ever seen, because I think he really could have thrived there as well. Among the great USC wide receivers in the NFL.
Yeah, won the Biletnikoff at SC in 2012, of course, had a dominant season at SC, had a great freshman campaign. His junior year, all beat up, but still productive in his own way. My first receiver pick, am not taking Marquise Lee because, I don't know, maybe Marquise Lee doesn't make my team. I take Drake London. Alicia, I am looking at the receivers positions a little bit differently than you are. I see USC as having three main categories of receivers in the last, you know, since the Carroll era, but really the last 30 years of modern football, like since SC decided to start throwing the football in the early 90s, right? You have the a playmaker, you have a technician, like a route running technician, and then you have a physical guy who's going to be the physical beater. I, with my first wide receiver pick, am picking the physical beater, and I would take Mike Williams if this was a list of what I was saying was the greatest USC wide receivers of all time. To me, it's Mike Williams. Hands down, it's Mike Williams to me. But if in a one-game scenario, in the game of college football as it is right now, I take Drake London in that physical beater position, that physical receiver spot, to be the number one, because I think we can see that he can be as physical as Mike Williams is while being quicker and super athletic to fit this offense. Give me Drake London.
I don't think it's a bad pick, and I was very tempted to take Drake London because I love Drake London. He's in there with the sort of dominant receivers that USC has had this century. Not a bad pick at all. I had to default to Marquise, and this is the trouble. This is the trouble.
Yeah,
it's difficult. I partly defaulted to Marquise for a reason that I'll explain when we go to the next wide receivers.
All right, let's go to the next receiver. It is for you. Who?
Robert Woods.
Yes.
Robert Woods took the spot that I thought I would always have in my heart for Steve Smith, mm-hmm, as the sort of
The route running technician.
The route running technician. That's correct. Yes. Exactly. The route running technician. Robert Woods, technician is the perfect word. Thank you for bringing that up. Robert Woods is a technician. And I don't think you get more reliable than Robert Woods. Like, Steve Smith would have been my just so reliable, you have to have him on your squad. Mm-hmm. Robert Woods is that, but also, you know, faster, stronger, more athletic. Just an upgrade athletically over Steve Smith in every way. And to me, if you create an ideal USC receiving core, you simply go back to 2011. You simply go back to Robert Woods and Marquise Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And that was young Robert Woods and young Marquise Lee too. And it's a shame that Robert Woods was injured as much as he was in 2012, because I think that 2012 receiving core with Marquise Lee, Robert Woods, and Nelson Agholor all healthy could have been better than 2011 as far as wide receivers go. But I have a soft spot for Robert Woods, a soft spot for Marquise Lee, and I can't go wrong with those two as my primary wide receivers in this exercise.
Yeah, I am going to duplicate your pick here for Robert Woods. He is my route running technician in the chat, or is formerly known as Jabroni Jabroni, says Steve Smith walked so Robert Woods could run routes.
Yeah.
I would say Kerry Colbert did that. I sort of, you know, I'm talking about these sort of roles. Colbert was before Smith. Smith was before Robert Woods. Robert Woods was before Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, they all are that route running technician. And I think you could say that each one of them improved on the other one. Amon-Ra St. Brown, in a lot of ways, I think is a better wide receiver than Robert Woods. But in terms of what they did at SC and how they played at SC, I'm going to take Robert Woods. And part of that is because Amon-Ra had an offense that had four receivers that they could spread it out.
Yeah.
And he did not have the 100 catch season that Robert Woods had. If Lane Kiffin had Amon-Ra in 2010, he would have done the same thing with him back in 2010 and 2011 that he did with Robert Woods. So, Robert Woods, that crisp routes, you know what he's going to do. You mentioned how he and Lee sort of mesh well. I think the interesting thing is how similar their individual skill sets are while being drastically different players.
Yes.
Like they're both speedy, quick guys, quick hips, can, you know, move around, nimble, all those things. They aren't necessarily tall and physically imposing receivers.
Yeah.
But yet, Marquise Lee, playmaker. Robert Woods, technician. He's your route runner. So yes. Let's go to the tight end spot, and then we're going to come back to the flex spot. If you have another receiver, you can put them there. Let's go to the tight end spot. Who's your tight end?
I had to go Fred Davis. My guy,
Mackey Award winner 2007.
Original Fred Davis. I was tempted to go with Daniel Amatabebe for a one game go, but realistically, I just think Fred Davis, in terms of being a USC tight end, it's hard to find somebody better. He was a real weapon in the receiving game. I was sort of trying to think of, given my other talent on this team, trying to think of a true blocking tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Rhett Ellison would fit here very well.
Yeah.
But I ended up just going with Fred Davis, just because you can't have too many playmakers on the field, especially if Lincoln Riley is pulling the strings. So I went with Fred Davis.
I was so tempted to get nutty here. I was tempted to put Drake London at tight end.
I was too.
if this was a Madden league, absolutely Drake London would be my tight end here.
Yeah.
Because I think that in this office, this offense with Lincoln Riley calling the shots, and if we truly go into this is a one game playoff and Lincoln Riley is the I could see a world in which Drake London just is that tight end, and then that allows you to get Marquise Lee in there, or Mike Williams or somebody else in there as well. I had to go also with Fred Davis. Because if it wasn't Fred, if it was going to be a true tight end, I think Rhett Ellison is a good shout there. But anybody else would end up being someone that I'd be like, well, I would just take Fred Davis over them anyways. Like Anthony McCoy. Okay, maybe, but I would just take Fred Davis over Anthony McCoy. Dominic Byrd, maybe, but I would just take Fred Davis over Dominic Byrd. Like, I you know?
I agree. I think part of the problem is that USC has had such bad luck at tight end in terms of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of talented tight ends that have come in. Telfer, Grimble and Telfer were good tight ends, just couldn't stay on the field. Amata Bebe, another one, good tight end, couldn't stay on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't really get to see a lot of those guys in their full form because they didn't really have the game time to build up to that. So I don't know. It makes it difficult at this particular position. It almost becomes Fred Davis by default.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I thought. You mentioned Grimble, who is the other guy you mentioned?
Grimble, Amata Bebe, Telfer.
You said
Amata Bebe.
Amata Bebe.
Yeah. He makes me drool.
Hold on.
Do you have it?
Did I just screw this up?
I don't think you have it, man.
I tried to do it. There we go. Replace. Here we go. How about now?
He makes me drool.
It's still okay.
He makes me drool.
Forget it. He does make you drool, so that still works. But just pretend that was the Amata Bebe drop. All right. Let's go to the running back spots. Very interesting potential options here. Who are you taking?
I am taking Ronald Jones II.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was tempted. Let me tell you, I was tempted to take Trey Madden. I was tempted to take Travis Dye.
Uh-huh,
I was tempted to take Marshawn Lloyd. These guys have all made me believers in the running back position. I certainly could have taken Lendale White. I think that USC has had Buck Allen could have been here, but Ronald Jones, in terms of complete running back performance, as my main guy, I think the ability for him at the college level to run between the tackles and also being a home run threat makes him RB1 for me. There is another name that I will decline to speak until later on, which is a little bit of a spoiler. But Ronald Jones, I just...
Wow.
I don't think you could go wrong.
Taking him over like Lendale.
I'm taking him over Lendale, yes. Wow. Because he's a home run threat in a way that Lendale was not. And as much as I love Lendale's power running, I don't know in this era of college football if he would fit Lincoln Riley's approach. Where I know for a fact Ronald Jones would.
Sure. I really debated Dominic Davis. Dominic Davis, obviously. I'm kidding. At least I have to cover my face for this because I'm not proud of this. But YouTube viewers, you'll be able to see first. I agree.
Yeah,
Ronald Jones.
We agree.
Yeah, Ronald Jones. I think in terms of strictly being a running back in this day and age, he's the guy. I think he's the guy. The closest, I debated Lendale, but I just couldn't do it. I think Lendale doesn't necessarily fit the modern game as much as Ronald Jones. That's not to say that Ronald Jones is better than Lendale. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that strictly as a as what they could do tomorrow if you just put them out there. And then the other side of that is if it wasn't gonna be Ronald Jones, who was it gonna be?
Artist formerly known as Jabroni Jabber Brody said Joe McKnight. It's a good pull.
Joe McKnight
in Lincoln Riley's offense would have been
it's a good pull.
Yeah.
I thought of one, if we're strictly taking the idea of a one game playoff guy, I don't think it would have been too insane to say Alan Bradford.
No.
Like, we're talking one game.
Yeah.
Like Alan Bradford is on nobody's list of top 10 Trojan running backs. But in a one game scenario, Alan Bradford's kind of a scary dude. Right?
Yeah, I mean,
DeAndre Ingram, kind of a scary dude in a one-game scenario.
The number of times I screamed for Alan Bradford to get more carries,
I'm
ripping my hair out, man.
All right, let's go to the flex spot. What do you got in the flex spot?
The one, the only, the GOAT, Reggie Bush. I think having the flex spot created so many more opportunities at running back, because if not for the flex spot, it would just be Reggie Bush.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked the opportunity to have a running back and also a just pure playmaker in whatever spot that Lincoln Riley wanted to use him in, whether that's in the backfield, whether that's in the slot, whether that's just running around in whatever position he wanted him to be. I think that, that Reggie Bush would be an absolute unstoppable weapon in a Lincoln Riley offense. You know, you could have with flex, you could have gone with another tight end if you wanted to do two tight ends, could have gone with another wide receiver, could have created room for someone like Amon Ross St. Brown, who could also do a lot of the all-purpose kind of stuff. But when it comes to being an electric playmaker with no peers, it's Reggie Bush.
Yeah, I am very disappointed in this exercise that we ended up with nearly identical teams.
There could have been with the flex, especially we could have gone because in a I had lot so of many ideas. Ways.
Yeah, I was tempted to go Stanley Havili. Mm-hmm. So much of me was like, "Oh, the flex! I can get Stanley Havili in here. Oh, I can do it! I can do it!" But then I just kept thinking like, if Stanley Avili was on the roster today, would he get used in the same way that he did in 2008?
No.
And part of me says yes, because he's not your prototypical fullback, and he absolutely could be sort of like a... Maybe he's the type of...
But he'd be a running back.
Maybe he'd be like an H-back that could actually like get playing time and whatnot, and a running back that could get playing time. Yes. And I think that there's a world in which that could happen. But then realistically, if that role exists, I don't know that Stanley Havili is the best one to play that role.
You're not taking anyone that we are putting on this team. You're not taking them off the field for Stanley Havili.
Right.
And
I love Stanley Havili. That's the thing that gets me here. I am a Stanley Havili stan. Yeah.
But you're not taking anyone on our list off the field in order to accommodate Stanley Havili.
I think that's the way that I got to Reggie Bush being my flex also, is that I took Reggie out of the equation. I said, okay, so I want three receivers, a tight end, and a running back. If Reggie does not exist, who are my three receivers? And again, I broke it down like I said earlier. I want a playmaking receiver. I want a technician, and I want a big physical threat. Well, the big physical threat was going to be Drake London. The technician was going to be Robert Woods. And the playmaker would have been Marquise Lee. Well, if you add Reggie Bush as the flex, you have to, like, whose role does he take? Mm-hmm. And I think that the closest role he takes is Marquise Lee's role. I know that Marquise Lee was a true wide receiver and Reggie Bush was not a true wide receiver when he was at SC, but I think in today's game, I'd be fascinated to see how Reggie was used, because I think he would be used like Zachariah Branch,
yeah,
where he would be that playmaking option at receiver that would be put in the backfield sometimes. He'd be used on fly sweeps. He'd be used on, you know, gadget plays. He'd be used on an option. He'd be, you know, someone who could get, you know, 30, 40 carries in a season, but also, you know, 70, 80 catches instead of just having 120 catches like Marquise Lee did that one year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think that that's how it would have been. I think it would have been a little bit more versatile. And for that, I think Reggie Bush was that guy to unseat Marquise Lee. If we would have made this very simple and just had the flex on top of the flex is the 12th man, then I think it would have been even more boring because our teams would have been basically identical. But yeah, I sacrificed Marquise Lee for Reggie here.
I think there's a pretty good argument to say you maybe the solution here is to sacrifice Ronald Jones and say you're going to go with Reggie as your running back, and then Marquise, Robert Woods, and Drake London as your three receivers.
I don't think it's a bad decision.
And I think you're probably in a decent spot. Hell, let's do this. Let's do Reggie at running back, Marquise, Robert Woods, Drake London at tight end, and then we have room for Amon-Ra St. Brown in that wide receiver, or Juju Smith-Schuster in that wide receiver core. Like,
yeah,
those skill position players, if you wanted
so
to
many
go,
options.
If you wanted to go four wide, it would be real, real scary. But we have to fit it into the personnel we decided. So,
yeah, Artist in the Jack says, I'm too square. Put Reggie at running back, Juju at the flex. The Trojans are going four wide with Reggie, Woods, Juju, and Marquise. That's terrifying.
That would be
insane.
The more I think about it, the more I'm thinking, actually, that might be the direction that I should have gone.
I mean, realistically, if this was a realistic offense, you'd be drafting like 16 players, right? Like, you'd have like five receivers and two running backs and two tight ends, right?
Yeah.
And if you did that, then your five receivers, there's Juju in there. Mike Williams is probably in there. You definitely find a way to have Ronald Jones, Lendale White, and Reggie Bush somehow all three in there. It would be absolutely wild. The different options: Amon-Ra, Pittman. You could squeeze anybody sort of in there. Zachariah Branch. You could find a way to get Adoree Jackson in there.
Yeah,
because that was the other option. I thought, like, is there a way to make Adoree my flex and have Reggie and Adoree together? And then I just thought that those players are just, if we're only picking 11 players, those two players are too redundant.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like, obviously it would be kick ass to have Reggie and Adoree on the field together at the same time, but they're just a little too redundant in skill set. So all right, let's go to the quarterback spot. Alicia, I think this is the easiest one on the entire offense. Do you agree?
There is only one answer, and it's wild that this is the way that it is now, but it's Caleb Williams.
Yes.
And it's honestly, it's not close.
No.
I love Matt Leinart, I love Carson Palmer, and I love Sam Darnold. And I think any of those three would be deserving of being part of this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is that Caleb Williams is the most talented quarterback I have ever played football that I have ever seen play football full stop.
And we know that he works in this offense.
We know in this
era of college football.
Yes.
So,
and like, can you imagine Caleb Williams with the offensive line we're about to compile and the skill position players that we're about we've already compiled? Like, it would not be fair. Put this offense against the offense that any other team in college football could put together with the same parameters. And with Caleb Williams at the helm, I do not think there was any chance that this offense would fail to score the requisite number of points.
Yeah, let's start on the offensive line at left tackle. This is one of the positions that we have different opinions about, so I'm excited to talk about this.
Yeah, left tackle, I am going with Tyron Smith.
No, you're not.
Yeah, I am.
Are you're going him? Wait, you told
me.
Are
you back? Are you backwards with?
You told me it's Matt Khalil.
No, Matt Khalil is my right tackle.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, we're okay. Spoiler alert: I'm taking Tyron Smith at right tackle.
Yeah.
We'll get to right tackle when we get there. We both agree on Tyron Smith.
Tyron Smith is on the offensive line.
Okay, but you're going to play him at left.
Yes, I'm going to play him at left.
Okay. Okay, so if you're watching on YouTube and you see the graphics, ignore the graphics. She's deviated here.
Yes.
Okay.
Matt Khalil at right tackle. But to put it more simply, my tackles are Matt Khalil and Tyron Smith.
Yeah.
And I think that Tyron Smith is just, beyond question, he's on this offensive line one side or the other. He is.
Yeah.
And for me, Matt Khalil's ceiling in a one game scenario, I love it too much. I think he it's hard because there are other great offensive linemen who you could put there, like Sam Baker. But for me, I'm going modern game, modern athleticism, a little bit more Matt Khalil's ceiling.
I think you probably got the right pick here, because I am taking Sam Baker. Three-time All-American. He was incredible. He was a stalwart on that offensive line for a long time. I see what you mean, that in terms of sheer talent and ability, that Khalil's ceiling can be higher than Baker, even though Baker's overall greatness and longevity was better, and yes, and career was better in that sense. But I see what you're saying, and in this kind of thing, that makes Khalil very valuable. Absolutely. I also don't think you can go wrong with either one of them. No. And I am a Sam Baker stan. Love me some Sam Baker. His dad, David Baker, because me and my dad were season ticket holders for the LA Avengers. Stand with the Avengers. and David Baker would be on the, he used to be the commissioner and have these hilarious commercials that they would play in the arena, back at the Stape. I go Sam Baker here at left tackle. You can't go wrong. I think that Khalil's a good pick. You mentioned Tyron Smith. Let's skip ahead to the other tackle spot really quick. Tyron Smith there, who is my right tackle, but he'll be your left tackle. You said he's the obvious choice here, and I think it's interesting because he's the obvious choice if you include all football careers, like in total football careers. Yes, he's the obvious choice because of all the USC offensive linemen in the 21st century, he's the only one that's going to the Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, right? Yeah. You agree?
Yes.
Presumably, he's going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, he is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's not going to the College Football Hall of Fame. Sam Baker potentially is.
Yes. And this is true.
And, you know, not to say that, like, it doesn't matter, because obviously this is a fictional world and we're talking about, again, like I made the argument for Alan Bradford, and Alan Bradford is
not going in the Hall of Fame.
He's not going to the College Football Hall of Fame, right? Yeah. Like, but I think that my way of giving the nod to Baker or Khalil in your case, over Tyron Smith as the first guy off on the team sheet on the offensive line was to make them the left tackle and Tyron Smith the right tackle. In part because Tyron Smith played right tackle at SC. He didn't play left tackle. He played right tackle. And so putting him on the right, I think, just kind of fits. I think you're right. In an ideal world, you have him on the left. But you also, any one of these guys could be the left or the right. It sort of doesn't matter because they're all franchise type guys.
Yes, exactly. I think that there's some certain amount of flexibility with the right and left when we're talking about guys at this level.
Yeah.
For me, it's just that, you know, Tyron Smith played his best football in the NFL at left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I trust that the circumstances of him playing right tackle at USC when he did are played into and sort of his age.
Because he was opposite of Khalil, yeah.
Yes, his age and development and all that. But when I'm talking about like the ceiling, if now we sort of reevaluate and stuck them in now in their
here's a question
fully
for
formed
you.
Forms, same ages and all that.
If it wasn't for Tyron Smith, who would you put at right tackle? Would you have gone Baker and Khalil together?
If not Tyron, yeah. I think
Tyron doesn't exist for some reason.
Yeah, I think Sam Baker and Matt Khalil. Probably Sam Baker. I don't know.
Is there no world in which Zach Banner got in here?
No, there's no world in which Zach Banner got
I
in
think
here.
That, generally speaking, there would be no world in which Zach Banner would get in here for me, with the exception of when we're talking about run blockers. There's two guys at SC, one of them is still on my offensive line to come up with, who I thought were just absolutely incredible at strictly being a run-blocking guy, and Zach Banner was one of those dudes. Like, yeah. Struggled pass blocking. Yeah, absolutely. Liability in the pass block. And not a guy who's going to go to the College Football Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah.
But as a run blocker, great run blocker. And I think there's a world in which he could see time at right tackle on this imaginary team. He could be sort of maybe the backup right tackle. But all right, let's go to left guard. Left guard, we have the same guy. So let's just rip off the Band-Aid.
That's Deuce Latuie.
Mm-hmm. Big Deuce.
Big Deuce. I went back and forth on Deuce Latuie, to be honest, because I wondered if his size would translate to the current game.
Valid. Didn't translate to the NFL.
He had an NFL career. I mean,
a long one,
but not a particularly short one either. He was in the league for more than 5 years, 5-6 years.
Sure, but he was a top 10 pick.
Right, right. Either way, yes. The sort of 320.
Sorry, he was a second rounder. Am I crazy? Oh. I just looked this up.
Are you mistaken him for someone else?
Maybe I am. He was a second round. Okay. Okay.
Either way,
mind blown.
Either way, 330 pound guy. As Kenny in the chat says, he also played for the Cardinals, which doesn't help. Yeah, no,
that's
fair.
That's valid.
That size of guard was immensely valuable at the time that he played. Would the value have diminishing returns in the current game, where guards are expected to be a little bit more nimble and athletic? I think that would be a potential question, but it's one that I'd be willing to find out, because pound for pound, as far as a guard who could just sort of set the tone for the run game, I want him in there, and I want to make it work. So, Deuce Latuie.
Yeah, I think that goes for everything. The biggest question is, how does he translate to today's offensive line being a little bit more agile?
Yeah.
And I think that's a valid question.
But there's also
he was so good that I'm willing to take that risk.
It's also hard to say with some of these guys, because like we talked about with BKU on the defense, like in the modern sort of structure of the game, would they have changed his body? Would they have,
right,
you know, made him into something else than he was? Deuce Latuie playing in 2024, would they have had him slim down? Like, would that have been something he would have been
possible,
capable of?
Yeah.
And then been a little bit more of the agile, nimble guard that you would see more often in today's game. It's hard to say. I don't know for sure. All of these guys that played 20 years ago, it's hard to say, because even, you know, we talk about the difference between 30 and 40 and 50 years ago, the training level, the sports science of it all, the sports science even from 20 years ago has gotten to a whole other level,
right,
from when, you know, the Carroll era guys were playing. So It's even hard to compare there.
Yeah. Let's go to center, and we do have the same guy again. So I'll just say it's Ryan Khalil. So you have two Khalils on your offensive line. I only have one. I'm going Ryan Khalil. This was pretty much an easy pick.
Is there another option for real?
So I think the other option would be moving someone to center to be it's interesting how the offensive lines work, right? Because you want your best lineman at left tackle, ideally, right? But also, like, your best technician is essentially your center, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody theoretically could play center. I think you can make a world in which you're like, Sam Baker's going to be my center. I think you could do it.
I mean, there's a reason that Max Turk ended up at center. There's a reason,
right,
that this year Jonah Monheim is going to be USC's center, because like you said, you just sort of take if they are capable of playing on the interior line,
mm-hmm,
you just sort of take your best offensive lineman and make it work.
Yeah.
And that's where I sort of, if not Ryan Khalil, who is it? I think there's certainly an argument for Max Turk. You could make an argument for Khalid Holmes. I think it gets tough though, because Khalil is head and shoulders for me.
Yeah, Chris O'Dowd. I think any argument that you have ends up falling flat to Ryan Khalil. I think Khalil is the man there. Super great long career in the NFL, and now he's in Hollywood. He's like a Hollywood producer. So great career that way too. Let's go to right tackle. I mean, sorry, right guard. We picked different dudes for this one, so I'm excited to discuss this. Who do you got right guard?
I have Elijah Vera Tucker.
I think this is your hottest take of all of the picks in the last 2 weeks.
I love me Elijah Vera Tucker. I really do. I felt more secure whenever he was on the field over the course of his career, just in terms of any position that he played. I think that he is just on a level that could stand up with the rest of these guys on this offensive line in terms of talent ceiling, in terms of single game performance, in terms of size, athleticism, strength, everything. I love me ABT.
All right, I'm just going to run off some names, and I'm just going to ask Elijah Vera Tucker or this person.
Okay.
Damian Mama.
Elijah Vera Tucker.
Okay. Andrew Voorhees.
Elijah Vera Tucker.
I love Andrew Voorhees. That one is a take. I love Elijah Vera Tucker. I would take Elijah Vera Tucker over Damian Mama. I agree. But Andrew Voorhees is my pick here because Andrew Voorhees was fantastic at SC last two seasons, especially when you saw the void of him not being there, which even was more eye-opening and really made you realize how valuable he was. But Chyler Rashal? You think ABT over ABT, Chyler Rashal?
Yes.
Charles Brown?
Yes. I mean, he's my pick, Michael. The answer to all of their questions.
I know.
This isn't a gotcha moment. Like, I did consider all of these guys. For me, it's ABT.
Fred Matua?
Yeah.
I like AVT. I like AVT. I like him in the NFL. Like, I like him. I just think there's a different pick there.
I think it's weird that you are so resistant to me having, like, when you picked Andrew Voorhees, who, again, I love, and great Trojan, and absolutely a fine pick here. But I don't know that there's a huge difference between Voorhees and Elijah Vera Tucker in terms of their performance as individuals.
Gigantic difference. I think Elijah Vera Tucker was very good at SC, but like I don't know that he was ever the All-American level, and Voorhees absolutely was.
I think that Elijah Vera Tucker was cursed with being on the USC team.
That's completely valid. That's why he wasn't
he didn't get any All-American recognition because you don't get that as an offensive lineman if your teams suck.
Yes.
But like the teams didn't suck because of Elijah Vera Tucker. He was literally holding those offenses together with Cotton Swabs
in terms of high
Scotch
profile
State.
USC linebackers, I mean linebacker linemen here. Austin Jackson's the one who has not gotten a single shout here.
I think Austin Jackson
and AVT are in a similar boat for me. Of like AVT was better, a better technician, since I keep using that word a million times today, than Austin Jackson, but. Austin Jackson was always someone who was built on his prowess was built on potential, right?
Yes.
His where you would rank, like he got drafted based on potential. He was a five star by Rivals, I think, based on potential and all those kind of things. I don't think he ever reached that potential. Elijah Vera Tucker, I think we've seen way more out of, but even still, I would put Andrew Voorhees over Elijah Vera Tucker based on what we saw. So it's close though. Last tackle spot, obviously, for me, it's going to be Tyron Smith at right tackle. And for you, it is Matt Khalil. So, again, if you're watching on YouTube, pretend this is Matt Khalil and not Tyron Smith. So that wraps up our teams. Your team, let's run it through again. Wide receiver, Marquise Lee, wide receiver, Robert Woods, Your running back is Ronald Jones. Your tight end is Fred Davis. Ignore the typo on YouTube. You know what's supposed to be there.
Yes.
Your flex pick is Reggie Bush. Your quarterback, Caleb Williams. And your offensive line, of course, is Smith, Latui, Khalil, Vera Tucker, and Khalil. My offensive picks here, Drake London and Robert Woods are my receivers, Fred Davis at tight end, Ronald Jones the running back, Reggie Bush the flex pick, quarterback Caleb Williams, and an offensive line from left to right of Sam Baker, Deuce Latui, Ryan Khalil, Andrew Voorhees, and Tyron Smith. So those are our dream teams. Thank you for joining us the last 2 weeks to help pick those things out and listen to what our picks were. Let us know your thoughts. Send us your emails, randomtroyfanside.com. Phone number, 818-643-7227. But Alicia, it is time to get into the Big Ten. A Big Ten Minutes. Yeah, we're going, we're talking Iowa, the University of Iowa, UI. Little fun fact, according to Wikipedia, the legal name of the university, is the State University of Iowa, but the Board of Regents approved using, quote, University of Iowa for everyday usage in October 1964, which means that Iowa is technically Iowa State. This is one of those situations that, like, UCLA is Cal or whatever, right?
Like, yeah.
Or
like Southern branch
kind of thing.
California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Southern Cal means UCLA or whatever. Yeah. It, one of those weird little factoids. But University of Iowa is what you're going to hear. Founded in 1847, a year before James Marshall founded that gold at Sutter's Mill. A year before. Before California was a state by a few years. Iowa City is the location for the University of Iowa. They are the Hawkeyes. Alicia, what's a Hawkeye? What do you think?
A bird? Is it literally the eye of a hawk?
Oh, you naive little child. according to the University of Iowa's website, the University of Iowa borrowed its athletic name from the state of Iowa many years ago, a.k.a. people in Iowa, just like last week, people in Indiana are Hoosiers. People from Iowa are called Iowans, but they're also called Hawkeyes. The name Hawkeye was originally applied to a hero in the fictional novel The Last of the Mohicans, written by James Fenimore Cooper. Cooper had the Delaware Indians bestow the name on a white scout who lived and hunted with them. In 1838, people in the territory of Iowa acquired the nickname chiefly through the efforts of Judge David Rohrer of Burlington and James G. Edwards of Fort Madison. Edwards, the editor of the Fort Madison Patriot, moved his newspaper to Burlington in 1843 and renamed it the Burlington Hawkeye. The two men continued their campaign to popularize the name and were rewarded when territorial officials gave it their formal approval. Alicia, is this the Native American version of gringo? Is that my understanding of what Hawkeye means? Am I crazy?
I don't think it's the Native American version of gringo. I think it's the Native American version of...
Well, Hawkeye was bestowed on the white guy. Like
yeah.
So, I guess I haven't read Last of the Mohicans, so I don't know the context here. So, fair enough. I don't want to put my foot in my mouth too much here, but it is a little, like with Hoosiers and Illini, it's like, just be Iowans, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't know,
what we're finding out is in this region, in this part of the country, they just have a lot of,
like, they really like the Native American
adjacent names, yes.
Yeah. But Hawkeye sounds badass. Absolutely,
it's great. Yeah,
sounds
great.
Badass. Yeah, a weird fact about the University of Iowa: the Iowa River literally bisects the campus. Like, goes right through it. Like, imagine the Trousdale was a river.
Like, Trousdale,
the Iowa River does that. It's incredible. Let's get to the fight song, "Fight, Fight for Iowa." Alicia, are you ready?
I'm ready.
The word is fight. Fight, fight for Iowa. Let every loyal Iowan sing. The word is fight, fight, fight for Iowa. Until the walls and rafters ring, go Hawks! Come on and cheer. Cheer, cheer for Iowa. Come on and cheer until you hear the final gun. The word is fight, fight, fight for Iowa until the game is won.
I like that. That a good rhyming scheme. It actually literally rhymed at the end, unlike Ole Miss's. I think it's interesting that the fight song is quoting the concept of somebody else saying fight, fight for Iowa. Like, that's a little bit quirky and interesting.
A little twist
on the genre.
This reads to me as ChatGPT write a fight song.
Fight, 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 cheer, cheer, cheer.
But like so many fight
Win
songs,
the game.
So many fight songs are very corny when you break it down like that.
Put the sports ball in the hoop.
It does its job. It does its job. I like the fight, fight, fight for Iowa kind of bit. Let's get to 10 notable alums. Tom Brokaw of NBC Nightly News was a Hawkeye. How about George Gallup, the inventor of the Gallup poll? From Iowa. W.P. Kinsella, the guy who wrote Field of Dreams.
Nice.
Is this heaven? No, it's Iowa. He is from Iowa. Was a Hawkeye. Tennessee Williams, the playwright. I think this is false advertising. You can't say your name's Tennessee Williams when you went to Iowa.
Yeah.
But he did. Gene Wilder, Tom Arnold, and Ashton Kutcher, all actors who went to Iowa. How about some musicians? Al Jarreau, David Sanborn, some jazz guys from Iowa. The Stoops family, they're all Hawkeyes. Bob Stoops, Mike Stoops, Mark Stoops, they're all Hawkeyes. How about this one? Harry Callis. Do you know who Harry Callis is?
I have no idea who that is.
Oh, Harry Callis, the legendary broadcaster of the Phillies.
Okay.
That ball's out of here. You don't know Harry Callis?
No, now that you do the voice, I recognize it. I just didn't know his name.
Yeah, that's Harry Callis, baby. And then last but not least, everyone's favorite Hawkeye, Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, Caitlin Clark, who is single-handedly funding my job right now.
There you go. Yeah. Alicia, what is your perception of Iowa fans?
I feel like Iowa fans are good fans. Mm-hmm. The Kinnick wave seems it makes them out to be kind of a cool vibes. I haven't necessarily heard complaints about Iowa.
Never
fans.
Heard a bad thing.
I'm sure that Iowa State fans have bad things to say about Iowa fans, but no, I don't think I've heard many.
Yeah, I think all the good vibes are there. First athlete that comes to mind when you think of the Hawkeyes, who is it?
Well, now it's Caitlin Clark because we're just talking about her.
Outside of Caitlin Clark, anybody
Caitlin
before
Clark.
Then?
Well, anybody? Okay. Part of the problem is that Cooper DeJean is in my in my thoughts because he just got drafted and he said that he would beat Caitlin Clark one on one in basketball, and I've written about that. So again, like that's my most
Cooper
recent.
DeJean trying to be the first white corner
to start the NFL.
Oh. Jason Sehorn. There's our USC connection
there. There you go.
I think of Kurt Ferentz. Kurt Ferentz, been the head coach since 1999, been a really
Emir
long time.
Smith Marset. That's who I think of.
That's a random pull. How about Dallas Clark?
Yeah.
but Kurt Ferentz, I think, is the guy. He's been the head coach for 25 years. Been there forever. Hayden Fry is someone that always gets talked about. I always think that it's interesting when people talk about Hayden Fry because I would say he's before my time, but he's really not. He stopped coaching in 1998. But yet I feel like he's way older than that. But three Big Ten titles, painted the pink locker rooms at Kinnick Stadium. Iowa, as a football program, 5 titles, won in 1921, 22, 56, 58, and 60. The first 2 titles in 1921 and 1922 were with Howard Jones as the head coach. Look
There's
at that.
There's our USC connection again.
Yeah. The last Big Ten title outright was in 2004. The all-time series with USC is 7-3 in 10 meetings in favor of the Trojans. First meeting was in 1925. Howard Jones' first season was an 18-0 Trojan win. At least any USC Iowa memories?
Beer Smith Marset.
Yes, Holiday Bowl.
2019 Holiday Bowl.
I maintain.
If Keaton Slovis had stayed healthy, USC I think wins that game.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I think that this idea that it was a blowout is...
The game got out of hand after the injury.
Yes.
And as Kenny said in the chat, that was the last game that the Iowa offense looked good.
So funny that you mentioned that. Last year they went 10-4. Pretty much went chalk, 0-1 against ranked teams, but they beat everybody else. They scored 15 points or less on 8 different occasions. They were shut out 3 times, all against ranked teams, Penn State, Michigan, and Tennessee.
It is a miracle that Iowa won 10 games last year while averaging 15.4 points per game. Averaging 15 points. Why did they win 10 games? Because their opponents averaged 14.8.
Yeah, absolutely insane. Insane. All right, we got 15 seconds left here. 2003, the Orange Bowl, SC beats Iowa 38-17. Watch that game at good, my favorite place. It went off.
Yep, that's that.
Yeah.
That was 10 minutes.
Yeah. All right. Brad Banks, I guess I could throw in there. That's Iowa. Looking forward to playing USC and Iowa. 2025 in LA and 2026 in Iowa City. Make your plans now. All right, let's wrap this thing up with a mailbag.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You've got mail.
We got a YouTube comment from John from last week. Can't believe you picked Talanoa Hufanga over Darnell Bing at safety. And next time, can you do an all-USC team picking from all different decades?
I stand by picking Talanoa Hufanga over Darnell Bing or any other safety that we picked him over, because we picked him over every other safety that could have been chosen bar Ronnie Lott,
anyone who's before Mark Carrier.
Yeah. But I just think in terms of talent, instinct, playmaking ability, I take Hufanga every day of the week. And the only player that I would take over Hufanga is literally Troy Polamalu of the era we were picking in. For the picking from all decades, I would be down to pick from the sort of broader historic USC. I think we decided the 2000s specifically because we've watched all of these players.
Yeah.
Where anything before 2002, I am not familiar with in terms of my own eyes seeing it. I've done a lot of research. I've done a lot of reading. I've sort of understand the greats and their place in USC lore and history. And I respect.
Famously, as a kid, you were blind.
I mean, I still am blind. But yeah, I didn't watch Marcus Allen with my own two eyes. I didn't watch Lynn Swann with my own two eyes. I didn't see them play football. I didn't see Richard Batman Woods with my own two eyes. I know he was a four-time All-American.
Three-time
All-American. He was a freshman All-American. He couldn't play. He had to play with the freshman team as a freshman.
Have I ever mentioned that you know why that rule changed?
Why?
Because the Marshall plane crashed.
Oh, that's dark.
Yeah, because the Marshall plane crashed in 71, and they couldn't field a team without using freshmen the next year.
Yeah.
And so the NCAA is like, okay, we'll allow freshmen to play for everybody then.
Yeah.
Which, in hindsight, insane that freshmen could not play until 1972.
Yeah, it's wild.
Insane. I think to your point, besides me being a nitpicky asshole here and nitpicking you on things, I think we can do an all-time team. Absolutely. My only problem is I can sit here and feel like I can, like you said, I think I can sit here and debate the difference between Talanoa Hufanga, Darnell Bing, TJ McDonald, etc. But I don't know that I can debate the difference between Dennis Thurman, Mark Carrier, Tim McDonald, etc., without just reading off the stats.
Yeah.
And if we read off the stats, it's a lot different than, like, if we read strictly off the stats and the accolades, you know, Stuart Cravens is nowhere to be found on a lot of different things, right? Like, yeah, we've talked about that before. Like, there's guys who would just not have had the production, right? Like, they weren't an All-American for whatever. Tyron Smith is someone who was very good. And yes, he got even better at the NFL level, but he
didn't get the accolades.
He didn't get the accolades.
You know, yeah, yeah. You sort of go by those if you didn't get to watch them with your own.
Now, right. Kevin Ellison was not an All-American.
I mean, and I would still say I'd pick Kevin Ellison over Taylor Mays, and I know that's right. a little bit of a bold take, but for me, again, it's Kevin Ellison's football acumen over the pure physicality of Taylor Mays, who would, by the way, get ejected every game if he played today. So, you know, take that. But what I was going to say is, yeah, I think it would be more interesting, just because we've done this exercise and we came up with teams that are very, very close to what they are. I think it would be an interesting exercise if we created some parameters that forced us into choices and forced us into variance. Mm-hmm. For instance, like, we put together a team, but you can't have more than two players from any one decade.
Yeah.
Or you can't have more than two players from any one coach.
You've really got to pick your spot. Like, yeah, who's my McKay era guy going to be?
Yeah.
I think that would be a fun way to put in it. The other thing that I think makes it difficult to compare, you mentioned not having watched Lynn Swann. The other thing is, like, how can you honestly compare Lynn Swann to Johnny Morton?
Yeah.
Or Juju Smith-Schuster or anybody? Like, he played at a time where the wide receiver position was so drastically different. Also, there, go back and look at what the positions were even called back then. So many times, like, receiver didn't exist until, like, the mid to late 70s. There were just ends. And end, does that mean tight end? Because sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Like, what is Hal Betzel? Like,
yeah,
is he a tight end or is he a receiver? Like, these are the kind of things where you almost gotta go back and find highlight reels and see, like, well, where did he line up? Because some places will say he's a tight end and some places will say he's a receiver. Like, those are the things that make it very sort of difficult. There's a lot of times where I'm very happy that I was born when I was born, because I cannot imagine living in a world where there was no standardization for things.
Yeah.
Like, they're living in a world where, like, Well, this stat didn't exist until 1974.
It's wild, like, that sacks have only been a semi-recent stat that we've tracked.
Saves in baseball are not that old.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's always weird that, like, this is the hardest hit ball in the StatCast era.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, the StatCast era is like 2015.
Years. Yeah.
So, like, it'd be cool if you were born in 2015, then you would never have to worry about that, like, in my lifetime then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it becomes easier to talk about things that way. Yeah, and then there's, you know, Sam Bam Cunningham is the guy that we talk about, right? As a running back, he was a fullback.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But what does that mean? Because a fullback back then in the I formation was getting carries, which is basically what a running back is. Like, mm-hmm. You know, so like it's hard to translate these things, which makes it hard to pick from sort of all the decades. Ideally, I would love to do an all-decade team. It just might get tough because, like, when it comes to running back, like, does John Arnett have an honest shout? It's hard to say because he doesn't have the statistics compared to OJ or Charlie White or Reggie Bush.
Yeah.
Or Marcus Allen or whoever. So, Makes it difficult. Rob Murdy in the chat says, for the Big Ten team previews, is it possible to play an audio clip of the team's fight songs instead of hearing Michael recite the words?
That's the fun of it, though.
we could do this. Maybe we get a clip and play it at the end. So, like, I do the 10 minutes and then we listen to the fight song.
Yeah.
Which, is next week Michigan?
Iowa. What have we done? Illinois, Indiana, Iowa.
I think it's next week, right? Is it Michigan?
Michigan is the
greatest fight song in the history of sports is Michigan. So
no, it's not Michigan.
Who am I? Maryland.
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 Yeah.
Okay. Maryland next week. And then we'll
forgotten team.
Yeah. Is Maryland or Rutgers the most forgotten team in the Big Ten? Because I think it's Maryland.
I think it's Maryland because everybody jokes about Rutgers. Yeah, like
Rutgers is a punching bag, and like you remember Rutgers. It's like I always think of the like people say that the Jags are the forgotten team in the NFL. I beg to differ because people talk about the Jags being the forgotten team, which means that they're not the forgotten team. The forgotten team in the NFL is probably more so like the Titans or Texans or Panthers.
Yeah.
Than the Colts. I mean, than the Colts, than the Jags. In hockey, it's the Ottawa Senators. For the life of me, I do this thing when I'm trying to sleep sometimes where I'm like, okay, you have a minute, you have to name all 32 hockey teams, go. And I'm like, okay. King Sharks, Ducks, and I'm just going down the list, right? Every time, it's the freaking Senators. Cannot remember the Senators to save my freaking life.
I'm pretty sure I didn't realize that the Florida Panthers existed for a long time, and I'm pretty sure I didn't realize that the Winnipeg Jets existed for a long time.
Well, they didn't. They famously didn't exist for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kenny says Maryland has the they're actually good September every year. They do.
Yeah. Yeah.
They absolutely do. So all right. Let's get back to it next week when we talk more USC football and look ahead to Maryland as well. So until next time, we will see you. Thanks for joining us as always. Email address randomtroy@fanside.com and our phone number is 843-718-643-7227. Until next time, we'll see you.
See ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.